Welcome to today's Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. This week, we continue to showcase the amazing world-class healthcare that's available to us here in Erie at UPMC Hammett. Today, we're joined by Dr. Robert Hauer, a physician at Bayfront Digestive Disease, a part of the UPMC Hammett Center for Digestive Health. And Dr. Hauer is also the medical director of gastroenterology at UPMC Hammett. Thank you for being with us today, Doctor.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And Doctor, first off, before we begin, can you tell us a little bit about the road that led you to UPMC Hammett?
Well, I'm born and raised in Pittsburgh, and my wife is originally from Erie, Pennsylvania. And I did my training in Pittsburgh at UPMC Mercy, and then did my fellowship at Allegheny General Hospital. And my wife and I decided to move back to Erie to start a family up here. So that's basically how I got here.
Sounds good. And Doctor, let's go ahead and begin and do a deep dive into your specialty. UPMC Hammett's endoscopy department has been honored again by the ASGE. Can you tell us who they are and the significance of this recognition?
Sure. So the ASGE is the American Society for Gastrointestinal Endoscopy, the ASGE, which basically is one of the governing bodies over my specialty. And they are the ones that, you know, in terms of recognition of excellence, that you have to go through a process to try to achieve that goal. So that's what they are.
And Doctor, from what I understand, I did a little bit of homework prior to the interview. It's pretty stringent. That's just not handed out to anybody, is it?
No. I mean, we originally did this a number of years ago, approximately 3 years ago, when I first wanted to basically show the community and the network in terms of the quality of care that we have in Hammett. And so you have to apply. You have to conduct an experiment, collect data, and obviously, you know, see if you reach their standards to be named a center of excellence. So we were able to achieve that in 2020, and then we decided to do it again in 2023. And it was obviously much more difficult because of COVID and, you know, the labor issues that we've all been dealing with. So it was much more intense going for a second time, but I'm pleased to say that we were able to achieve that recognition.
We've done many of these interviews with UPMC Hammett physicians through the years, and it's very common where we're talking about the excellence of awards. I know with a lot of people, the general public, there is a wrong belief that the larger the market, whether that's Pittsburgh, whether it's Cleveland or Dallas, whatever it happens to be, that the quality of care is better. And in so many cases, I've learned that's not the case, because the quality of care right here in Erie is absolutely amazing. And it sounds like it's amazing at the UPMC Hammett Center for Digestive Health, too.
Yeah, I completely agree with what you're saying. I mean, we run into those kind of, you know, questions or issues all the time, right? I mean, I want to go to the Cleveland Clinic. Well, why do you want to go there? Well, because it's the Cleveland Clinic. I mean, a lot of these things people have to realize are a result of marketing, you know, in terms of national health systems and things of that nature. I can tell you that, you know, my colleagues and I, we all trained at very large facilities, and we perform just about every procedure that's out there in terms of GI health. So, yeah, no, I feel like we do a very good job, and it can be, you know, compared to the bigger facilities.
Well, I know from your reputation, from the homework that I did, it really does speak for itself. Let's do a deep dive now into your specialty. What advice do you have for individuals who may be experiencing digestive issues and they're unsure when to seek medical help?
Well, that's a very broad question, right, Joe? So it all starts with the primary care physician, right? They are the gatekeepers in terms of people's health. So I think what is the best way to go about it would be if there was a concern, whatever it might be, whether it's in my world, you know, reflux or abdominal pain or change in one's bowel habits, you know, those are things that they should maybe at least make a phone call to their primary care service. If not, they can always just call our office or make an appointment themselves to be seen.
Dr. Hauer, in a lot of cases, I would imagine with your area of specialty, it really is a quality of life issue. So it would seem to me maybe the best thing to do, as you said, is ask questions with your general care doctor and improve the quality of your life.
Yes, absolutely. And I always tell people, you know, getting information or asking questions is always a good thing. It doesn't hurt you. It doesn't, you know, it's not going to cost you in terms of anything, but that's really what I try to tell patients to do. You know, no question is silly. You know, this is your health. This is your body. A person should ask, I guess, is the bottom line.
Doctor, in your experience, what are the most common digestive issues that people face? And what are some of the key warning signs or maybe symptoms they should be aware of?
You know, I'll hit a few broad ones because there are a lot. But in terms of reflux, right, that's a very common complaint. If it's a symptom that continues and doesn't go away for a number of weeks, or certainly if somebody were to throw up a little bit of blood, that would be something of concern, right? Unexplained weight loss, where someone isn't trying to lose weight, that's a biggie, right? We want to know about that. Continual episodes of abdominal pain is something we deal with all the time. And then the other thing really is a change in one's bowel habits. And that can be really anything. I mean, people, one of my favorite questions is when, you know, I ask if someone's passed any bright red blood when they have a bowel movement. And everybody almost always says, no, Dr. Hauer. But then you ask it a different way. Then I say, well, look, have you ever had blood from hemorrhoids or when you wipe? And then they look at me and say, well, yeah, but that's my hemorrhoids. So, you know, it's always how you present things, because we hope that maybe that is from hemorrhoids or something of a benign nature, but that's something that would need to be investigated.
Let's talk about, and once again, I mean, we've done enough of these interviews where we always like to talk about the advancements in the specific field. It always seems that UPMC Hammond is on the cutting edge in that respect. Are there recent advancements in recent years that has just made your job significantly easier, or breakthroughs in digestive disease treatment and diagnosis that you've witnessed at UPMC?
Yeah, that's a great question. The one big advancement, in my opinion, is the procedure called the HALO, H-A-L-O. And this was invented to treat Barrett's esophagus. You know, Barrett's esophagus is a common finding. I don't know if you're aware in terms of, you know, what Barrett's esophagus is, but it's when people have acid reflux over a long period of time, and then it splashes up into the esophagus and it causes the lining to change. And the reason we care if people have Barrett's esophagus is that it carries with it a risk of becoming cancer one day. So what we used to have to do in the old days, if we would find the Barrett's esophagus and it would have something called dysplasia, which is a term used to describe how, I guess, serious or far along the disease is, these people would have to get surgery, right, where they would have to get part of their esophagus removed. Now, with this procedure called the HALO, we are able to treat the Barrett's and actually get rid of this condition and basically save them from having to get surgery for this. So that's a very big advantage. And myself and my partner, Dr. Henry, we're the ones here at Hammett that performed that procedure.
Well, that sounds like a huge advancement.
Yeah, no, it really is. I mean, because people, Barrett's is a very common finding. And before this came out, if we would find, you know, that it was advanced, there was nothing that we could do except the, you know, sending someone to have this major surgery. Now we can do an outpatient procedure to treat this condition and basically save them from developing cancer. So that's a big deal or advancement in our world.
Dr. Hauer, in our brief time together, you have already touched on acid reflux. I know another common digestive condition is IBS. Can you further explain these conditions and discuss available treatment options?
Sure. So irritable bowel syndrome is very common, and it's diagnosed as someone who has recurrent abdominal pain at least one day a week for, you know, 3 or more months. And it's usually related to when they have defecation or they have a bowel movement. And then people notice that their bowel movements change. Some, you know, there's 3 different types. One is diarrhea predominant. One is constipation predominant. And then the other one is called a mixed, where someone basically flip-flops between the two. They develop abdominal pain. They have distension. It's a very common, you know, common condition. In terms of treatment, there hasn't been really, the treatment has stayed the same, right? First is being able to identify people that have this. Sometimes, you know, we have them do dietary modifications that help. We try to exclude what we call gas-producing foods, beans, onions, carrots, things of that nature, because people that have irritable bowel, they're very sensitive to the distension of the intestines kind of thing. Sometimes we have them, you know, try a lactose-free diet. That's been shown to help people. I use a lot of probiotics with my patients. And then really, in terms of identifying whether this is more on the constipated side of things or on the diarrhea side of things, really kind of guides you in terms of treatments. There's a few, you know, new medications in terms of constipation predominant, right? I'm sure everyone has heard of Amitiza or Linzess, right? Those are the big ones that everyone uses in terms of the constipation. My biggest, you know, and this has been documented, is that there's a real association in terms of anxiety disorders and irritable bowel. And we have found that when you treat the anxiety, actually their GI symptoms get better. So that's another avenue that we can look at as well.
We're speaking with Dr. Robert Hauer, Medical Director of Gastroenterology at UPMC Hammett. Doctor, I understand gastroenterologists often perform endoscopic procedures. Can you describe what these procedures entail and when they might be necessary for patients?
Well, yeah, I'll try to be brief. If a person has a symptom that is of concern to either a gastroenterologist or their primary care physician, that usually leads to getting either the upper endoscopy, which is called the EGD, or getting the colonoscopy, depending on one's symptoms. In terms of screening, right? I mean, I'm sure everyone's aware in terms of colon cancer screening is that there's been an uptick of prevalence of colon cancer. So instead of starting screenings for the average person at the age of 50, we now start that at the age of 45 in terms of screening. There's just so many different, symptoms or complaints that would lead, and it's really kind of on an individualized basis. Certainly, if somebody develops an alarm symptom that either the primary care physician is concerned about or the gastroenterologist is concerned about, you know, that would have to be on an individual basis kind of thing.
Understood. Doctor, you just gave me the perfect segue into my next question. Could we talk about early detection and screening for digestive diseases like colorectal cancer? And what can individuals do to reduce their risk of developing these conditions?
Okay, well, in terms of your second part, we'll do first. Mm-hmm. In terms of what a person can do to reduce their risk, there really isn't anything that a person can do in terms of their lifestyle. Now, when I say that, there have been studies that, you know, increased smoking increases your risk, right? We all know that. High fat diets have been believed to increase one's risk for colon cancer. But these risks are very small. The greatest risk is family history of either colon cancer or polyps or inflammatory bowel disease. So the greatest thing that a person can do for early detection is really to get an early detection mode, you know, to do it as early as they can. Or if they have a symptom, to not dismiss it or blow it off and have, you know, a physician or a professional talk to them if they think something else is warranted. So really the answer is, you know, obviously we can talk about colonoscopy, we can talk about Cologuard kind of thing, but really that's what a person needs to do in terms of decreasing the risk of developing colon cancer.
Doctor, I want to get into another question about nutrition, but because we're speaking on the topic of colon cancer, I want to do a follow-up to that.
Yeah.
Can you comment on the improvements that have been made in the colonoscopy preparation? I understand, and I know when I did it, I'll be honest with you, it was unpleasant, the preparation, but I know that's changed, hasn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, when I had mine done, everybody's complaint is about the prep. That's the biggest complaint. And there have been huge advancements in terms of the prep for a colonoscopy, right? Everyone, and it sounds like maybe Joe, you had, quote, the jug when you did yours, which is obviously everyone's least favorite way of prepping for a colonoscopy. I myself did a Miralax prep before I had mine done, and it wasn't that bad. So the biggest issue that people complain about, and they've done studies, that it's the volume. Okay, the volume. It's not the taste. It's the volume that people complain about the most when doing a prep. So in that realm, they have developed what's called small volume preps, where the volume has basically been minimized significantly, and they do split dosing where you don't have to take all of it at once. You take a small bottle of it and water at a certain time, and then 4 or 5, 6 hours later, you do the same thing. So it's not, you know, such a egregious procedure. There's also pills, right? There's a pill prep that is out there that if people just don't want to do any kind of liquids, that they can do a pill prep as well. So it's gotten a lot easier to have this procedure done.
Once again, I've got to ask another question about nutrition. You've already touched on it multiple points in this interview, what a significant role in digestive health nutrition plays. Are there other recommendations that you can offer beyond what you already have regarding having a healthy digestive system? And are there specific diets or maybe foods to avoid for those with certain conditions?
For certain conditions. I mean, nutrition, you know, obviously we have, you know, a well-balanced diet is always important. Just here in the United States, obviously, you know, we tend to eat a lot more processed foods, right? And certainly processed meats, which, you know, have been shown to increase our risk of colon cancer. But in terms of a magic formula for our GI system. I mean, there are things that I'm sure, you know, that you can eat, but if I try it, it doesn't agree with me. I mean, I think really the process should be, you know, an overall balanced, healthy diet is the way to go, right? Not so much concentrated on red meats and things of that nature, but rather roughage and more, you know, fish and things of that nature. I don't know if that really kind of helps you with your question, but that's really, that's all that's out there.
No, it does. Thank you. You touched on something earlier and we kind of glossed over it, but before I let you go, I've got to go back to it. Once again, in preparation for the interview, I was reading a little bit about emotional, psychological factors that can impact digestive health. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because it seems like that's the source of the problem in a lot of cases.
It really is. So I see patients from the ages of 12 and up. Okay. So I see, you know, people in that preteen to teenager all the way up through adulthood. And it's very similar, whether you're of that age or you're elderly. And there's always such a huge component of what I would say, you know, either psychological or psychiatric kind of component to our GI health. Years and years ago, when I was in training, the amount of medications to treat anxiety and depression, they just didn't exist. Okay. There was only a few, right? Such as like Prozac, right? That was a big one back then. But then they did all these studies. Then they discovered all these new avenues and these new drugs. Well, then what they found was then when they used all these different medications to treat anxiety and depression is that people's GI symptoms got better. And then they were like, well, why? Well, then they found out that the same neurotransmitters that are in your brain are the same neurotransmitters that are in your gut. And actually, the nervous system of your intestines is almost as complex, you know, obviously, as our brains. So then when people, you know, have anxiety and depression, they feel that they have these things because they have an imbalance of certain neurotransmitters. And so when you take a Celexa, you know, or a Buspar or something like that, they take that to correct that. So then what they found is that then these things actually work and help with the balance of the neurotransmitters that we use in our gut. So that's really kind of what led to, you know, this belief in terms of the mind-gut kind of paradigm, okay? So when somebody comes in, and as everyone knows and very common, is when somebody is under stress or anxiety or there's something going on in one's life, what happens? Their GI symptoms get worse. And then the reverse is true too. So that is something that when they come to see me, we really talk about what's going on in their lives and something, you know, to identify these triggers and to hopefully try to treat that. Because almost all the time, and certainly people that have irritable bowel, Joe, they always get better. They always get better with these things. So yeah, so that's a very important thing. And then we try to use different medications and whatnot to kind of help with both.
Dr. Hauer, on this show, we always give the physicians of UPMC Hammett the last word. Any advice, messages? And by the way, thank you so much for your time today. I know how busy you are, so it is appreciated. Any advice or messages you want to convey to listeners to promote better digestive health and overall well-being?
No, I think that we struck on all these things with this interview, right? Is don't be so quick to disregard a symptom, I think is the most important. If you're not feeling right, or certainly if you see a little blood or you keep having abdominal pain, something like that, then you want to get these things checked out, okay? Because most of the time we can really help. And it is, you know, it's something that when someone doesn't come in and then they come in too late, it's always a sad thing because we know that we could have helped. So I think the most important is to, if you have any symptoms, you know, to please to get in to talk to a healthcare professional. And then in terms of your screenings, please, please get these things done because it's the most preventable cancer out there in terms of, you know, getting the colonoscopy. And I think those are, you know, the two big points.
Thanks for listening to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. You can access today's program or other episodes of Business Spotlight by clicking on the podcast tab on our homepage. Join us again next week as Dr. Ralph Ford, Chancellor at Penn State Barron, presents another episode of Barron Talks.